we had gotten up to 21. So this is Hanogea Bekovad. Okay, now this perek is fascinating because it's talking about machines where you can become tummy by touching what the machine is manufacturing. That was like a fascinating issue. So at what point are you considered to be in touch with, let's say if you got a loom, and this loom is now, it's got a large bolt of material that it manufactured. It's currently still working. And the material ended up becoming tamei. At what point is your touching the loom considered to be being in touch with the material? Fascinating question. And that talks about all different types of things that are similar to that. What part of the machine do I touch, which gives me contact to that which the machine is in touch with? So we talked about over there looms, and we talked about plows, and we talked about saws, and we talked about the giant saws with two people on either side, and we talked about other types of blades that are attached to wooden handles and things like that. So it got us also into the Indian of Yodos a little bit. And then the next perek, which is perek HaShulchan, not surprisingly, talks about tables, and it talks about the idea of the things that we usually do with tables, is that they have veneers. So, I mean, the question is, the wooden table, what is the relationship of the table to the veneer? So if you use a marble veneer, you know, so the marble can't be makabel tumah because it's stone. Now, very often you will cover part of a thing. So let's say you've got a part of your tables covered with marble in order for you to be able to put hot things down on the table without damaging it. I'm sure we've all seen things like that. So we have to talk about places that are left unveneered when we veneer things and places in general that are usable but are missing parts so that you'll still use it. Maybe you'll use it by putting it on its edge. Or maybe you'll use it if it's got slats in it by sitting on some of its slats, but not all of its slats. All of those issues are part of Perek HaShulchan, including the issues of the toilet seat that we spoke about over here, which pieces of the toilet seat retain tumah, what is considered to still be usable when there are slats, parts that are not really serving you directly. They're a hole under you, but there's nonetheless parts that are usable. And then we went on. I already did Hakadur yesterday, right? Yeah, maybe I did. Okay, so then we went into Hakadur, which is baseball. We talked about the baseball, and those are all types of kalim that are filled with other things. Right, I did this. Okay, sorry. Chof Dalet. So the next perek is called Shlosha Trisim. So even though it's called Shlosha Trisim, the real name of the perek should be Shlosha, and I'll tell you why. Because this perek discusses many, many variations of a kli that comes itself in three variations. Namely, one type of it is mekabel tumas midras, because it's suitable as a secondary use even, but suitable for sitting on, and therefore it will be mekabel tumas midras. One of them is not suitable for sitting on, but it does have the requisite base cable or whatever is necessary for the Kabbalah's tuma to be makabel tuma, which we call tumas mace, but which obviously would be any tuma that would be an ava tuma. The reason we call it tumas mace is because that's the only thing that's a good competitor to the tumas midras, because there we're talking about an ava tuma, and it can be an ava tuma if it touches a mace gufa. But remember, that's a klal throughout this Masechet. Every time we talk about tumas mace, what we're talking about is a tumas maga from an ava tuma, and then one surah in which it's tar completely. So we talk about different types of trisim that you. What's a trisim? I forgot the word in English. You know, where a soldier holds something in front of him to, I just can't remember the
word. Like a shield?
Yes, thank you. Okay. Like I say, it's wonderful for Kalim to have aphasia, right? Okay. And we talk about different kinds of wagons and stagecoaches and so on, and different types of arevot, which are used for kneading, and sometimes they can be turned over and sat down on, the large commercial ones, different types of boxes sometimes can be used for sitting on their side, if they're like garden boxes for storage, which would be roi for midras. Some of them have a base kibble that are roi for mace, and some of them are too large to move. They're not going to be makabel to him at all. And then we've got all types of other types of kalim, types of mats, types of backpacks, computer backpacks. It's a question of how we view them as being interconnected, and wheelbarrows, you know, sometimes they're used just like to move things from one place to the other, but you don't hold things in them, and so on. Okay. But this is a very complex parak, but that's the one thing that is about it. It's shlosha, meaning it's got three different phases. Now, I have to admit that the last Mishnah is also fits in, but it doesn't fit in because it has three phases. It fits in because it has three different configurations that do not relate to the question of the rest of the parak, which is midras and tumas, mace and tyra. Rather, the last Mishnah is a fascinating discussion of what the din is where you use one thing that is almost worn out to be a patch on another thing. So we had a couple of fascinating cases over there. Let's say you got two boxes. You can patch one box by gluing the other box onto one. Now, the box that you glue may be in very bad shape, but it still has enough in it that it provides sort of protection for the other one, may cover some of its holes. So the question is, if it's made by different materials, what din does it get? So we had cases of where, fascinating cases, where you'll use a broken kind of metal dish to put onto your tea kettle, and you'll solder it on, right? So is that considered, does it contain in it the tuma that was there of the original kli, or is the tea kettle the main kli? And that's exactly involves us in whether, does it still have the tumas midras it had, or does it still have the tumas mace? But you could see it's only peripherally related to that main thing that all the other kalim were about. So that was the perek shlosha, I think we can call this probably better. And then we get into this wonderful parak, which is that kol ha-kelim yesh lem achoraim v'toch. Remember that the din of achoraim v'toch v'pashtas is a din specifically in kli cheres. The Torah introduced this new concept that there's a kind of kli that can only be mekabel tuma from its inside. Now, the inside that the kli cheres is mekabel tuma from is also a totally new idea, because it's mekabel without touching. It's mekabel from its air space, not by maga. So interestingly, the Rabbanan used that as a model for this whole new halacha. That whole new halacha is the din of tumas mashkin, which is the Rabbanan. Obviously, mashkin can never really be matame, a kli, because mashkin can never be an avatuma. The problem is that there are liquids that are not mashkin, and those liquids can be metame kalim, because we've got all the liquids of mayonis azov or nida and so on. So if you've got a little bit of saliva, urine, whatever, which could often come in contact with a kli, that would be metame. That would be metame midiraisa. So because of that sensitivity and other fascinating situations we spoke about by truma, of sticking your fingers into your mouth and so on, the Rabbanan made a general din that mashkin are metame kalim, but in order for us to avoid being metame, burning truma, and thinking that it's really tame midiraisa, because of that, they made a weird din. And we found this many times throughout the Masechet, that where the Rabbanan make a din of tuma that is built out of whole cloth, they do something strange about the pattern of its halacha in order to alert the individual who knows that it's tame to the fact that it's only tame midrabbana. So one of the things that calls attention to the fact that tumas mashkin is the rabbana is that they do not treat a kli that became tame b'mashkin as being the same from its inside and its outside. So if you touch the outside, only the outside becomes tame and not the inside. A very weird kind of thing. So we need to discuss at great length, what is the real definition of an inside, outside, upside down? No, it's not that part. But the inside, outside, we need to worry about. The truth is, we actually do worry about upside down in this parak, because we talk about kalim, which when you turn them upside down, they have a kli on the bottom, and we wonder whether that's considered to be a separate acharayim v'toch. So we could really call this inside, outside, upside down, and that would give us all of the issues. Because, I mean, inside and outside could also be representations of usage. So, for instance, a handle on a spear. So the handle may be the outside, then the actual sharp end, a metal, might be the inside. Or maybe the place where it fits into is the inside. All of those issues that we need to decide are in this dafka, this perek about achorayim v'toch in all of its incredible detail. And the next perek, which is the perek of the sandalim, and you'll remember that Barnea actually brought us an ad that was on the internet about the actual sandalupgiot. And it called it that today, which was amazing. I forgot what was the site it was on. It was really cute. I mean, it was Victoria. I mean, one of these really chashuv sites. Anyway, what was it?
I don't remember.
It was okay, it was very cute. Anyway, so the idea over here, our kli or, we can't really hear you, so our kli or that are made into kalim, not by the fact that they have a base kibbol, a real base kibbol, which is the way that we talked about the general need to be metame with kelim, but rather because they are built into a base kibbol through the use of shnatzot. Now, the use of shnatzot means that you have basically a wire, a string through it, and you pull it into a shape. But if you would take out all of your strings and things, you would just end up with a flat piece of leather. So there's a lot of kalim like that, including some of the even modern sandals, where the sandal is essentially a raw piece of leather that's been very beautifully made into shape by the fact that it's got these laces that go across it and they fold it up around your foot. There's a lot of things that are like that. And that includes all types of decorative covers for jewelry. It includes pocketbooks that are made like that. And those issues about what is considered to be a loss of the kli and what is considered to still be part of the kli, and the difference between having the strings permanently attached to the kli so that you can easily reinsert them, and the difference between strings that require a lot of either patience or a lot of practice, which means that you can only put them together if you're a professional, and otherwise you go nuts. Now, how many of you have lost the schnutzes on your gym shorts? Oh my God. Try to stick that string back in and keep pulling it. It's a disaster, right? Or your pajamas. So those type of schnutzes, there are schnutzes that are very hard to get back in to their place. So that the Mishnah defines the difference between things like shoelaces in leather or the type of schnutzes in a backpack that might make it very difficult for you to be able to keep your phone in properly. And it talks about the difference between the place for your computer, the place for your phone on the side. Apparently in those days they didn't have phones. They had water bottles, but be it as it may, it's the same idea of that little water bottle placed on the edge of your backpack. It's really adorable to see the way that Caleb fits into modern usage so beautifully.